listening and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Portland Japanese Garden, celebrating its 50th anniversary with the Wakokoro Brothers with Masahiro Nitta, the three-string samurai on the shamisen, Wednesday, October 16th at the Portland Art Museum's Grand Ballroom. Tickets and information at pam.spotlightboxoffice.com.
This is KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 9:01 a.m. Coming up on Political Perspectives, Richard Wolff, economist, writer, and professor, presents an extended commentary on how capitalism is working. At 9:30, we'll hear from local organizer and activist Tiffany Ayers about bees and seeds and World Food Day PDX this Saturday. It celebrates pollinators, seeds, small family farmers, and healthy local foods. At 9:45, Don Merrill reports on how the ongoing government shutdown is affecting many of the agencies we depend on to keep workers, food, infrastructure, and financial regulations in place. At 10, Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. Headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, host Dennis Bernstein presents excerpts from a new documentary on the Nakba. And at 11, on The Dirtbag, host Glenn Andreessen discusses how to convert a lawn or a weed patch to garden beds. Thanks, KABU members, for your generous support. Not a member? Please go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today to join. Stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
Let me turn then to a discussion of a major topic that is shaping the economic realities of our day. And I want to talk about the way capitalism is working. It's really what the underlying problem is, causing the government to break down, causing our political system not to work, causing the polarization in America between, if you like, the Tea Party on one end, the Democrats and Occupy Wall Street in some sense on the other end, and lots of folks in between wondering which way to go, how to express their upset at what's happening in the economy, and how to begin to act to deal with it. That's a problem of our economic system not working. So I want to go over why it's happening and how it's happening. First, what exactly is happening? And here I have to repeat something I have said before, but it bears repetition. Capitalism as a system is relocating itself from one part of the world to the other. And this has to be understood and faced. Capitalism grew up about 300 years ago, first in Great Britain, and then spread to the rest of Western Europe, and then to the United States, and then to Japan. Those are the three areas, Western Europe, North America, and Japan, where capitalism grew in its first 200, 300 years. That's where it was concentrated, that's where it was profitable, and it developed. Along the way, it put working people into terrible conditions, and they eventually fought back against overcrowded cities, against unsanitary homes, against inadequate wages, against child labor and women's exploitative work, etc. And slowly over time, a deal was worked out. The capitalists would plow their profits back in, become richer and richer, but they had to share some of the growing wealth with the workers who in the end produced it. And that was took the form of raising wages. So over 200 years, the wages and therefore the standard of living of workers in Western Europe, North America, and Japan rose. Until by the 20th century, and certainly by now, the standard of living in Western Europe, North America, and Japan much higher than the standard of living in Asia, Africa, Latin America, etc. But in the 1970s, this reality was accompanied by technical changes. Jet engine travel that would allow you to get from one corner of the globe to another in a matter of hours. And modern telecommunications, the internet, email, all of that. The ability, therefore, to move around the planet in ways you never could before and to communicate around the planet in a matter of seconds. That allowed a company in New York to control a factory in Bangladesh as easily in terms of monitoring it and controlling it and dictating what happens as it used to be able to do with a factory 50 yards away. It became possible for capitalism to become mobile. And mobile it went, because the capitalists understood that with the opening to them of Asia, Africa, and Latin America, they would have the chance to become much more profitable than they otherwise could, because they could get rid of high-cost workers in Western Europe, North America, and Japan, and move to low-cost workers in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. No rocket science needed to understand this. Since capitalists are driven in their competition with one another and in their desire to capture ever larger shares of markets, they're driven by profit and profit considerations, they could make more profits where wages were low than where wages were high. So capitalists began leaving, this is the point, leaving Western Europe, North America, and Japan, and setting up shop instead in India, China, Bangladesh, Nigeria, Brazil. You get the picture. What were the consequences of this? In Western Europe, North America, and Japan, the consequences were abandoned work sites, factories shuttered, offices closed, stores abandoned. And with the jobs leaving, wages began to stop rising in Western Europe, North America, and Japan the way they had for the previous 100, 200, 300 years. That's the reality. Not only did wages go down, but we had wastes of resources. Empty factories, which you can see all over Western Europe, North America, and Japan. Abandoned malls, abandoned stores, empty offices, wasted tools, equipment, raw material, floor space, you name it. Waste of materials, lower wages, growing unemployment, and broken cities. As the businesses leave, the revenue of the cities collapses. Unemployed people can't pay an income tax. Destroyed communities don't buy from one another. They don't pay sales tax. They don't pay income tax. The cities, the towns, the states are pinched for revenue, so they begin to cut back on social services. They cut back on teachers. They cut back. You get the picture? Capitalism is abandoning the areas which were favored before. The same profit-making logic that made capitalism work in Western Europe, North America, and Japan, that made capitalism give rising wages to workers who demanded it because they were making so much money, that same profit logic has now decided it's better to be in Asia, Africa, and Latin America and to abandon Western Europe, North America, and Japan. The question is, therefore, what do you do about an economic system, capitalism, that has decided it's got greener pastures somewhere else? It was one thing for Americans, Europeans, and Japanese to come to terms with a capitalism during the phase when it at least raised their wages. It's an open question whether that was the best thing working people could have done, but they did it. But now we have a new question. Is capitalism an acceptable system when it isn't delivering you the goods, when it isn't delivering you rising wages and a rising standard of living? It's doing that in Asia, Africa, and Latin America for workers there at much lower wages. For workers in Western Europe, North America, and Japan, the question is, how do you feel about a capitalism driven by profits, making decisions that have to do with a economic result, let's call it, that is not good for you or your family or your children accumulating debts to get a degree that isn't going to get them a good job anyway? How's this going to be handled by the American people, the European people, and the Japanese people? Because that's the reality now, and that's the reality into the foreseeable future. Now, why do I hammer this home? Because it's also the case that profit-driven movement of capital is very problematic in China, India, Brazil, Nigeria, and the other places to which the capitalists are going. Here's the irony. As the capitalists go there, they're reproducing the history they had once in the United States, Western Europe, and Japan. Horrible conditions as masses of rural people in those parts of the country flood into the cities looking for work, trying to get a bit higher wage than they used to have to live with, which is what incoming capitalists bring them. The result is terrible conditions for people. Cities that cannot provide basic services to large numbers of people. And wages that are so low that the profit extra for capitalists is enormous because they're paying the lower wages. And so you produce unbelievable wealth. China had as many millionaires produced last year as Americans did, even though as a country the mass of people are much poorer. You're having inequality of income in both the advanced world and the world to which capitalists are now moving. Extreme inequality everywhere is the benefit of capitalism. The people in Asia, Africa, and Latin America are observing inequality that even rivals our own here in this country. It's as if the movement of capital has really helped the top 1% everywhere at the expense of 99% everywhere. It's extraordinary. The irony is, for the first time since this slogan was coined by working people, it actually applies. Workers of the world unite. You don't have much to lose, and you have a world to win. So here's the question. Is there something that we can talk about in terms of this movement of capital from the Western Europe, North America, and Japan to Asia, Africa, and Latin America, and so on? Yeah, there's another dimension. It's the environmental or the ecological. As capitalism leaves the United States, as the capitalists go where profit takes them, they leave behind a society that is so pinched, so troubled by unemployment, by home foreclosures, by deteriorated cities such as we've talked about, Detroit, Cleveland, Camden, my hometown of Youngstown, Ohio, and so on. There's no time and no money to deal with ecological issues. They're pushed under the rug again, as they have been for so long. Think of it in yet another way. When capitalists leave the United States, Western Europe, and Japan and go to Asia, Africa, and Latin America, they do so because it's more profitable. But of course, it's only more profitable if the commodities you make, where you pay low wages, can be shipped back to North America, Western Europe, and Japan, where still most of the people with money to buy things still are, even as their societies deteriorate. So there has to be an explosion of what? Movement of goods from places where it's cheap to produce them, because you don't pay wages properly, to the places that can buy them. That uses up the ocean. It wastes colossal amounts of fossil fuels to move products from where they're produced, Asia, Africa, Latin America, to where they're still mostly consumed, Western Europe, North America, and Japan. This absurdity pollutes the air, pollutes the water, wastes resources, and is ecologically highly destructive. Why do we have that? Because capitalists have been free to move to where they maximize profit without regard for the environmental effects. And in the places to which capitalism goes, India, China, Bangladesh, Nigeria, Brazil, Pakistan, and so on, ecological nightmares are unfolding as all the horrors of early capitalism, pollution of the air, pollution of the water, destructive chemical dumping, you name it, are flagrant in all those parts of the world, not controlled at all as the early capitalism was in the West too. So we see the freedom of capitalists to follow the profits, move as they wish, are destructive on multiple levels, both to the parts of the world they abandon and to the parts of the world to which they go. What's the solution? The solution is to change the system. This is Richard Wolff. This is Economic Update. And I'm teasing you, but I'm saying I will provide you with a solution, if you like, to this specter of a capitalism out of control in the hunt for profits when we return. Welcome back, friends. This is Economic Update. This is Richard Wolff, and I want quickly to remind you that we welcome your comments, your questions, your criticisms, for sure, as well as any other kind of communication you'd like to give us. Please, in order to send us these messages, go to the websites where there are also many of other kinds of materials that may interest you, either to the first one, rdwolff.com, or our second website, democracyatwork.info. Okay, I promised something in the nature of a solution, and you will not be surprised, at least those of you that listen regularly to this program, to know that my solution is called worker self-directed enterprise. In other words, change the organization of enterprises. Democratize the economy by democratizing the enterprise. What does it mean? It's really quite simple. That the decisions of what happens in an office, in a factory, in a store, in a corporation, should be made by all of the people who work there, not by a tiny minority whom we call today the major shareholders and the board of directors selected by the major shareholders. That tiny minority is making the decisions we just analyzed in terms of their horrific consequences, both for the so-called advanced industrial world, Western Europe, North America, and Japan, and for the places to which capitalism is now moving in its hunt for profits, Asia, Africa, and Latin America. So I want to suggest that here's some of the things that would happen if workers themselves controlled their enterprises, democratically voted on what to do. First of all, they would not be driven by profits. In other words, it's not that profit wouldn't matter, it would. But profit would be one objective among many others. Let me give you an example of how that might work. Suppose the question was, should an enterprise located, for example, in Lille, in the north of France, should it close and move to Shanghai in China? Same issue, should a plant in Cincinnati, Ohio, do the same thing? Or a factory in Osaka? Or fill in the blank. Here's what would happen if all of the workers made the decision. The plus about moving would be that the enterprise makes more profits. True enough. No question that if you could get the same work done and sell the goods at more or less the same price, maybe a little less, but pay lower wages, you'd make more profits. But what are the negatives? The negatives which a capitalist corporation doesn't have to pay attention to because it isn't responsible for them. I'll give you some, as I already did. Number one, if you leave, the workers there have no job. It's highly unlikely that if workers made the decision, they would move to another country since it meant giving up their own jobs and incomes. Not likely going to happen. But this is important. If the enterprise stays there, the jobs continue. And if the jobs continue, those workers can make the payments on their homes so we don't have abandoned neighborhoods. If the jobs continue, they pay taxes to the state. So it doesn't have to cut back on the social program. The city won't deteriorate the way it has before. If the workers make the decision, they take into account all the social consequences of moving production abroad. That's precisely what capitalists don't have to do in our society. Even though the example of what the French government did last week, the National Assembly giving workers' councils controls over whether factories are closed, is a step in that direction. But if workers ran the enterprises, we can be quite sure that they would take into account not just the profit, which is a plus, but the lost jobs, the lost state revenue that are minuses, and they would make their decisions accordingly. And I think that's a crucial difference. Number two, suppose workers, self-directed enterprises, workers in control, democratic enterprises, what were the form of enterprises being established in China, India, Nigeria, Brazil, and so on. You know what that would mean? It would mean that the places which are growing would also be benefiting everybody, not just a tiny number. If it's obscene in the United States to have multi-billionaires side by side with millions of people who can't pay for their kids' education, imagine how much more obscene it is in a much poorer country where basic food and clothing are inadequate for the masses of people to also have multi-billionaires. Those countries don't need that, just like we don't need it. And if workers ran the enterprises, they would never distribute in a poor country billions to an individual while the impoverishment of the millions continues. They distribute the benefits of growing production in those countries much more equitably. Just as in the United States or Western Europe or Japan, if corporations were run by the workers in them, they'd never distribute billions to a few people so they could buy millions of acres across the states, etc. They wouldn't do that. They would distribute it much more equally. For those of you interested in the fundamental importance of not allowing gross and obscene differences in wealth and income among the people, both in the Western Europe, North America, and Japan on the one hand, and Asia, Africa, and Latin America on the other, changing the organization of production, democratizing the enterprise, is the best chance we have of doing away with this obscene inequality that we see on display around us all the time. Let me move on and give you yet another example. If workers made the decisions of enterprises and they didn't move them the way we see capitalists doing because they're not so profit-driven, because they weigh all the dimensions of a move, not just the bottom line on profits, you would also see ecological benefits. Workers would be much more concerned with controlling pollution because they live right there. They wouldn't adopt a technology that did damage that their children would have to breathe or their neighbors would have to drink. They're not making a decision on profit that ignores the ecological consequences because the company doesn't have to pay for them. Workers have to pay in health bills, in death, in sickness, in all the rest. So they're not going to make those kinds of decisions. So we're not going to have wasting our oceans, wasting our air with all the traffic moving goods produced in low-wage areas to the rest of the world. We don't need that. It's not efficient to do that. It's only efficient if what efficiency means to you is profit. But efficiency was never meant to be defined exclusively in terms of what's profitable to the few. If efficiency has any honorable meaning, it has to do with what's best for the many. And for what's best for the many, that's the inspiration of democracy. So the real question is, wow, democracy is violated when a tiny number of people can make decisions for their profit, even at the expense of what's best for the majority of the people. It has always been an effort of those who defend capitalism to argue that what's profitable is also what's best for all the people. In my opinion, that was never true. But in our day, now, when we observe the abandonment of Western Europe, North America, and Japan by a capitalism that justifies moving to the rest of the world because it's more profitable for a minority. And we can see that when we notice that the minority who own the shares of these companies, the top 1%, are wildly more rich than they were 20 years ago, while the other 99% are nothing of the sort. We can see it happen. What the majority need and want is not what capitalism is delivering. That contradiction, that confrontation, is a major factor changing the world that we live in. And it's important for everyone to know it and to know clearly what's at stake. Thank you very much for being with me. This is Richard Wolff. This is Economic Update.
My time, babe. They ain't gonna change. Change, change, change. Change, change, change. They ain't gonna change. Yes, it is.
This is KBOO, where the time is approximately 9:27 a.m. Coming up in just a couple minutes, we'll hear from local organizer, activist Tiffany Ayers about Bees and Seeds and World Food Day PDX this Saturday, celebrating pollinators, seeds, small family farmers, and healthy local foods. Right after these pre-recorded announcements. Stay tuned.
I hate a song that makes you think that you're not any good. I hate a song that makes you think you're just born to lose, bound to lose. No good to nobody, no good for nothing. Because you're either too old or too young or too fat or too thin or too ugly or too this or too that.
Folk music is one of the first social media communicating news of social import. It still does so today. Join me, Don Jacobson, on Friday, October 25th, 12 noon to 1:30, for Sing Me a Song of Social Significance. From Woody Guthrie to Cy Conn, you'll hear songs that are meaningful to your lives, songs that are inspiring, and songs that are just fun to listen to. Cy Conn and David Rovick's CDs will be available as thank you gifts for your pledge. 12 noon to 1:30, Friday, October 25th, only on KBOO.
Well, listeners, you may have heard my voice before. Portland wouldn't be what it is today without KBOO Radio. K KBOO Radio has brought people together through the airwaves in an interactive process that has allowed Portland to become a richer, more vibrant, more progressive city. A city that let go of a freeway along what is now Waterfront Park. A city that has an activist community, whether it's for bike lanes or fancy food or whatever it is. KBOO has been part of the cultural underpinning of all that we have become together. Yep, you've heard me before. I'm Vicky Tempe, now Victoria Stapiello. I was a station manager when we built our studios in the early 1980s. All I did then was pitch for money so that we could do this debt-free. We own our own home. We have no mortgage. Not my doing, but all of our doing. We need you to continue to support KBOO as a vibrant, healthy underlayment for all that we build in our community.
Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Political Perspectives. My guest is Tiffany Ayers, local activist and organizer at Bees and Seeds, which is coming up this Saturday. It's an event celebrating pollinators, seeds, small farmers, and healthy foods, and more. Tiffany Ayers, welcome. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about this, how this event came about.
Well, it's basically connected with the March Against Monsanto. I organized the March Against Monsanto in May. And this time around, we decided to opt out of marching because we felt that we needed to focus on local issues such as the 50,000 bees that died in Wilsonville. They didn't die at the hands of Monsanto poison. There are other chemical companies that, you know, are also detrimental to our environment and our health. So we thought we'd make a broader focus, and a lot of people are aware of the bee deaths, and we thought that we would get them out. And we're going to have, you know, a beekeeper speaking and a live hive there for people to look. Obviously, it'll be contained,